deeper down the rabbit hole. Saturday, 6 p.m., live in Toronto, Ontario, at the Queen City Curio, a cult and spiritual store. This is Deeper Down the Rabbit Hole and the Queen City Curio videocast. Where are we at, Zach?
607 Girard Street East, Unit 401 and 2, Toronto, Ontario.
That's right. Big Trouble in East Chinatown. Come see us. Now, today we are going to have a very talented set of artists, poets, ritualists, writers, all the combination of things. And they have multiple journals that they produce about the goddess Hecate, who has been mentioned in the last couple of shows. So we're happy to kind of bring everyone on today and kind of get a collective. What is this goddess about and how they experience the magnificence and gloriness of Hecate? So let's start by introducing everyone. We're going to have everyone introduce themselves today. Fawn, why don't you kick us off?
Hi, everybody. I'm Fawn Hexa. I am the editor-in-chief of Catabasis, which is a journal that we created in dedication and scholarship of research to Hecate. I've been a Tantric Buddhist practitioner for going on almost 30 years now, and I've also been practicing my own brand of witchcraft for as long. I have a master's in library and information science, so I'm a trained librarian by trade, and I have a bachelor's degree in religious studies, so I have a special place in my heart for Thelema and all things tantric.
All right. Inara?
Hi, I'm Inara Caldwell. I live in Seattle, Washington. I'm a writer and musician, and have kind of a eclectic occult background, everything from... Got my start in Wicca, which didn't last that long before I got a little disillusioned, but traditional witchcraft, a little chaos magic, found my way to Hecate in the last few years, and that's kind of where I am now. I write, I play music, I compose, and I do rituals.
All right. Thanks, Harper.
Hey, Andrea, thanks. And also thanks to Fawn for inviting me to be here. So the only thing that matters here is that I write poetry.
You're welcome.
Thanks. The only thing that matters here is that I write poetry. And I write poetry about and for Hecate. And there is other things there, but that's the only thing that counts.
All right. And finally, Lucera?
Hi, everyone. I'm Lucera. I've been practicing magic for about 20 years. I am the founder, writer, and editor at Athenaeum Azostos. So when Fawn invited me to copy edit and write a little bit for Catabasis, I was more than grateful and more than willing. Happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, it's great to have everyone here. As I said, we've kind of been playing around this. We've been playing around having Hecate being mentioned in the last, I don't know, three shows, right? Right, Zach?
Yep.
So it seems appropriate that we have finally a show where people, she is the topic, the only topic, in fact. So maybe, where did you start? What was your most profound experience that got you into Hecate enough to actually start writing poems or rituals and actually or create a journal about just Hecate?
Did you want me to start?
People could start. Well, whoever wants to jump in, jump in. More flexible, you know. It's not like we're in a schoolyard.
Fine, you have to go first. Come on.
It's okay. I'll go first. So sometime in 2010, I was working with a small group of women and we did a ritual where we were facing our fears, and it was at New Year's Eve. So we invoked Hecate, since it's a very liminal time. And I've always known about her. I first heard about her in Macbeth and when I was young, and I wanted to be like those witches. And she showed up and was, as people know who she shows up to, sometimes it takes a while, but you can't really say no when he's taken an interest to her in you. I tried joining a couple different groups, got kicked out, or, you know, they disband as things happen, which is why I'm not really a joiner, and I've been a very solitary practitioner. The first book I read about Hecate was by Jade Soul Luna, which I think is probably one of the best books on Hecate worship, because he's coming from an Agori tantric background. And it's very bhakti oriented, which is totally jives with me because that's my mode of operations. So I learned everything from her directly. I have a very personal relationship with her. I tend to make friends with other people who are also interested in her, and especially the scholarship that we have access to. There's a lot of stuff like that's in German that's being translated into English now. And so we're actually going to have better those of us who aren't, you know, academically connected are able to get access to things like that, which is, as a librarian, I'm all about that. As far as the magazine, I've been trying to get published. I had a blog for about 10 years, and I wrote about my, it was basically my magical journal, and wrote about my ups and downs and everything. And my pieces about Hecate were always very popular. And so I tried to get them published, and because I have a big mouth sometimes, or, you know, I've pissed off the wrong people. And so I'm never able to really get published anywhere. So I decided, well, what should I do? So I asked Hecate, because she wanted me to write about her and she wanted me to do these things. And I'm like, well, what do I do? Well, she told me, you're going to have to make your own sandbox. So that's what I did. So I have a sandbox that my friends get to come play in and publish their work and share what would probably not always be published. Give a voice to new people who want to get their work out there. And plus we just have a really great group of women who come together in this publication and just do it out of the love and devotion to all the same deity. So so it's kind of a work in progress. We just finished our first volume, issues 1, 2, and 3. And you can see the way that it's progressed. We started off very, unfortunately, when we were set to publish issue 1, I happened to be in jail. So I still got the magazine out, even though I wasn't able to be there, like to actually do the thing. So we've really, this has been a real journey, and we've really stumbled along through this first volume. And so I think we have a really good reader base now, especially people who are new to Hecate or people who want to write poetry also and want to find inspiration. And so that's kind of where we're at now.
So I have to ask, based on that, do you attribute Hecate to getting you out of the jail?
No. You know what's funny is I didn't hear her the whole time I was in there. She went real quiet, and then Santa Morta appeared instead. So that's a whole other topic. But she's very much well. I was a prison librarian for 3 years prior to going to jail, and she was definitely there with me. I carried keys everywhere I went. I had to lock, unlock doors. It was a very haunted prison. It has been there since the 40s, 50s. So there were a lot of people that died there. Also, the idea of criminals, people who are outside of society that aren't really acceptable, they tend to kind of gravitate towards those deities as well. So she really helped keep me safe while I was in there. And so she's definitely shown up more and more in my life as far as like integrating my personal life with my spiritual life. You can't do this work for a long time and actually be dedicated and not have these things happen. So
all right, who else like to go next? That was great, Fawn. Thanks.
So
no one has a great personal story.
So I'm gonna confess.
Come on, Harper.
My experience was sort of the opposite. So I discovered and became acquainted with Our Lady when I was diagnosed with cancer, and I came unwilling to this party. I needed a thing to do after the bad news. I'm in the OTO. I was a lodge master in Minneapolis at the time, and I needed something different. And at the time, Jason Miller's class was going on, and so I took it. And she dragged me hook, line, and sinker to worshiping her. And there's very little I can do these days without that. And I have studied, so I'm a scholar, right? I have a PhD in chemistry, but I write for a living. I write science for a living, but I did all my own research. I used Jason Miller's class. I used Jack Grail's book. I used Sarah Ilse Johnson's book. Tons and tons of people out there. Hecate is a big thing right now, and that is an absolutely good topic for us to talk about. Why now? Why her? Why do we need that ferocity at this moment? But I needed that ferocity because I had cancer and I was afraid to die, and she was there for me in some really dark moments. And most of the poetry that I have given to Fawn for use in Catabasis is based on that pain and that need and that longing.
Interesting. Very interesting. Not interesting that you had cancer. That's bad. But good that she could...
Oh. It was interesting, trust me. just not keen.
Anara, how about you?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, I had kind of an eclectic background dating back a long time ago. Then at a certain point, everything seemed to just go dry. I had no inspiration, no... sense of any sort of spiritual current at all for, you know, over a decade. And then I started sort of feeling a pull to get back in, and I started just kind of building my own sort of eclectic practice. And I was originally focused quite a bit on Lilith, but what kept drawing me was this sort of concept of liminality and transitions between different states of being, different phases of life, different journeys. And then I found Hecate. And of course, when you talk of liminality and Hecate, I mean, it's two peas in a pod, really. And so she made herself known to me and just really started calling me. And I just related to her in ways that I had never related to any other deity or spirit in my entire life. And she kind of just swept me off my feet. And I am one of those newer authors that Fawn mentioned. So I'm really, really grateful to be here and really grateful for the opportunity to get some things going and help support Catabasis. So glad to be here.
Great. Mm-hmm. Lucera, you're last but not least. Like, what convinced you this is where you need to be with Hecate?
Well, you know, much like Anara, I was sort of in a dry spell, and much like Harper, I did not choose Hecate. She dragged me, kicking and screaming by my hair, back into practicing magic. I actually had taken a break for about a year and a half. Wasn't even really on social media. I was doing a full introspection journey, doing some healing inside and out. And then one day I'm outside tending my garden and I look up and there's this black dog at the three-way crossroads that was by my house about to be hit by a car. And I run and I save this dog who we then adopted. It just was so in my face. It was undeniable. It was a whirlwind. Like Inara said, I was definitely swept off my feet into the current of the Dark Goddess. She is pretty indescribable, but if I could use one word, I would say electric. And from there, I'm a scholar too. I don't have quite as many letters after my name as Harper does, but I went and started researching myself, and I met Fawn, and I met Harper, and I met some other wonderful people, wonderful women especially, who are in the community, all doing pretty interesting, brilliant, powerful things that I find are sort of reflections in this great current of Hecate, creating this microcosm, right? And we're all just doing it. I particularly like Katabasis because it is, Katabasis is a journey to the underworld. And so it becomes this sort of chthonic introspection as well, different than the introspection I was having several years ago when Hecate came to me, but still able to learn and my appetite for knowledge, I guess you could say, is pretty insatiable. So I've been researching, and the more people I meet, the more resources I find. And it's just been fascinating, interesting, beautiful, no regrets.
No regrets. No regrets. It's kind of interesting because two out of four of you are sort of like, yeah, about this.
Got dragged into it.
My experience with Hecate is very similar. I have no actual interest in the Greek pantheon whatsoever, except they keep this particular goddess keep showing up continuously. Because the Greek pantheon's a little too popular for me to actually sort of work in it, I guess. It's too common right now. And Hecate, being the most popular of the goddesses, definitely would not usually be, I am not get on the popular train with goddesses, and yet they show up on their own without me calling. And you all reference that continuously. All four of you sort of reference this goddess showed up, or I got interested in it, and they showed up on their own and then made their presence known multiple times. And I think that's a common interesting similarity that you all mentioned, and is similar to my experience without being called. That, oh, look, there it is. There's a dog bark right there in the background, which is, of course, one of the first symbols. So, but maybe you could expand on that this is a goddess that for many of you did not need to be called, like that they chose you, and what that felt like when you finally realized there was a choice being made from the other side.
Isn't that always true, though?
I think she's kind of a I was going to say, she's kind of a goddess for our times. I mean, even before COVID, things were, we've got it easy compared to ancient people, but you got to be kind of tough, especially in the occult world, in order to move forward with anything you're trying to do. And she's kind of the tough love mother I kind of equate her with, where it's like she's not going to give you what you want, but what you need. And she's a taskmaster. She's a taskmaster. That's why she has a whip, to ensure the going, to keep you moving forward. And I think that's what people kind of need right now. They need that kind of love where it's like, okay, kid, they throw you into the deep end, now swim. And but know that you're safe, that there's this safety there too at the same time.
There's been so many
Yeah, no, I feel that as well. And these times, everything changes so quickly. I know probably everyone throughout history has said that about their times, but it seems that there's so much change and so much need for fluidity and adaptability, and that's kind of where this liminal nature of this someone who is the goddess and master of transitions is really inspirational and helpful to me. I find myself falling back in her arms just daily, it seems, for help in these transitions in life.
She's the queen for getting unstuck, isn't she?
Yeah.
I think.
Sure. I think also we often are so quick to categorize her as a goddess, we also forget she is the Titaness as well. And so her presence, unlike other gods and goddesses, seems to be a bit more all-consuming, titanic. You know, it's definitely titanic. And so getting swept in that current is larger than some of the other currents I've been in, which is why I think there's such a tremendous following. You know, her cult is larger now than ever. But yeah, it is. It's all consuming.
I definitely wanted to mention that, like what you just said, because I think that's an important point. In some myths, Kate is not just a goddess. She's also a titan or the enemy of the gods, one of the enemy of the gods, and enemy of order itself, which you would expect for, you know, a liminal being to basically sort of maybe not necessarily be so tied down to the exact order of things when you're talking about transitions between states. So it's an excellent point. And one that I think this kind of primordial point sometimes forgotten, but not apparent, but none of you seem to have forgotten. There's this primordial edge to this being that is not necessarily is not necessarily aligned with society or aligned with societal rules.
Is it what you're saying, Andrea, is that change is not aligned with society and societal rules? Hecate is aligned with change. No?
I would agree with that assessment that change is not aligned with our current societal norms.
We as humans, we hate that. And that's why we're in so much need, dire need, physical need, consumptive need of help to change. We're terrible at this.
Well, yeah, we definitely are terrible about embracing change. You know, change is pain, right? Transformation is pain. Who wants that?
But we all need it. We can't live without it. And more's the case now, right? If you think back 2,000 years to let's pretend Chaldean Oracle's time, what was change like then? Change was not like it is now, where we have to have a new phone every year just to keep up, where we have to actually download a new program to take part in a discussion. We're absolutely at wit's end with all the change that we have. Look at the pandemic. Look at our government. Look at everything. We can't stand still. Ever. Isn't it true?
Yes, but at the same time, juxtaposed, it's that she's in the stillness, the subtle, you know, in that very quiet place, and she's the worker from afar. So she's distant and subtle. So there's this dichotomy of this intensity with also this very, you know, stoic kind of stance.
What a beautiful word that is. Stoicism.
Well, and I think similar to what Harper was saying about change being counter to, you know, the norm, we see that with her. A worker from afar is exactly what I was thinking, Fawn. You know, she's always there working at a distance with us, against us, through us. She's not just everywhere, but she is, I mean, when we say liminality, we mean this Titan goddess exists in the spaces between everything, you know, between everything. And so it does become larger and more encompassing in that way too. And also Ungirt, you know, Azostos. So I think we can learn much about her by exploring her epithets. And there are very few gods that have quite as many epithets as Hecate does. And we see her cult evolve over time, right? I think oftentimes people really want to mount Olympicize her and just keep her as this sort of Greek Oronic celestial goddess, but there are so many other aspects that we've learned about based on historical writings and based on the epithets that we have. So there are very few that are, and not only that, but you know, even in Theogony, we learn, you know, Zeus gave her dominion over the land and the unfruitful sea. So very, very few have, oh, here you are, you know, for the land, here you are for the celestial, because you're one of the Titans that didn't get locked up. Here you are in the sea, here you are in the underworld, you know, because you're Persephone's alternative queen, because you helped rescue her with Demeter. So you start seeing every world she has some dominion in, and that's just uncommon.
Which and so now, into,
go ahead, Harper.
I was going to venture that the four of us here and all of the people in the world like us are currently learning her new epithets, because epithets are only present while they're useful, and now she has new ones, and we discover new ones all the time. All right. That was what I wanted to say.
Well, no, it goes in a perfect segue where it's like, I was about to ask, is like, with epithets and even the multiple associations, how do you all work with her personally, since she is in a liminal state? She is multiple things. So is there a particular aspect of her that you work with?
I think for me, it's just contemplating those mind-bending paradoxes that you find in her epithets. A pair that I find enthralling is Panforba, all devourer, and Pantrophe, all nurturer. And you find that over and over again. You find in the Greek magical papyri, especially, you find her, even within the same spell, you'll find her referred to as everything from a beautiful young maiden to a terrifying ancient being. And all of these things that seem almost impossible concepts to hold together at the same time when thinking about one entity. And I think that's part of what's necessary for kind of getting to know her, because our minds do have to be broken in order to kind of transcend and kind of get even the smallest taste of kind of her immensity, really. That's something that I love doing, just flipping open the PGM to some random page and just finding a spell that relates to Hecate and looking through and finding all different ways she's discussed and encountered. And it's just really, really rewarding.
I think one of the things about the epithets that really strikes me is the way that we modern people are so bad at understanding paradoxical information. So as Inara said, you know, there are Hecatean epithets that are radically different, 180 degrees apart. And we modern people are terrible at that. We want to have a reason for each one, but we have to realize that ancient people weren't like that, and that they weren't so hung up on this notion of having a reason for everything, and the irrational part of ascribing epithets to beings is very important, and we need to think about that in terms of ourselves as ritualists, in terms of ourselves as artists. We can't describe everything rationally. We shouldn't even try. And maybe one of the things that Hecate tells me is, you know, hey Harper, why don't you fucking stop that? There, I said it. Fucking.
Yeah, some shows that might be really transgressive, but I mean, every week it's like somebody says fuck.
Someone drops that bomb every week.
I'm so happy it was me.
Today was you. Right, you're the first one. The F bomb award.
Okay, ladies, get in there.
I spent a lot of time working with her specifically in the cathartic realm. I think because I was attempting to work through fear, and she's one that can definitely help with that. I think I spent a little too much time in there because I know that can happen too, and so I'm trying to reach her through the celestial spheres now, and working through like the different planetary spheres, and I kind of see her as like this giant axis mundi that kind of goes through all of them, and that's why she's like a guide through these different pathways, that and why she can be so mutable like that is because to be the tour guide of the universe, you kind of have to know a little bit about everything. And right. So I feel like that's kind of her role for me.
That's so awesome. I love it.
Hecate, Turk.
I think for me,
I think you just created a new epithet.
Right, I know, there. Right there.
Exactly. Yes.
Go ahead, Lucera.
Oh, so I think much like what Fawn was saying, Hecate came to me, you know, and I had spent some time already working with chthonic gods. I'm a Dionysus devotee as well, and Hermes. And so that energy, that chthonic energy, even some of the more draconian or infernal aspects of her felt very comfortable to me. Something similar and familiar to what I had already been working in. And so, you know, everything from like using the Hecatean Inn from S. Connolly. She has one, Anana Hecate Air. I found much power in that, you know, and also working with that sort of ruddy-footed Jason Miller aspect as well felt very, very familiar. Although, and I have sort of announced this publicly, I just got done doing 13 months of working with her Bor Boraphorbic aspects, which if you really want to clean up the filth in your life, work specifically with Hecate Bor Boraphorba, which means, you know, she's the filth eater, right? Hecate the filth eater. And so, you know, I think I'm going to take Fawn's advice and maybe kind of err on the side of working with some more Auronic celestial aspects and epithets for a while, just to balance out that sort of, you know, my catabatic journey that I was involved in for so long now. And now it's time for me to ascend with her.
Mm-hmm. Is there any other, so you mentioned a couple aspects that really stood out for some of you. Did anyone else have some aspects that really, when we talked about the chthonic elements a little bit, there are other aspects that kind of, you really had a close working sort of, they had a major impact that it was this particular aspect for a while, until then, and of course the liminal changes, and then it's something else. that really stood out?
If I may, I did a really extended working a couple of years ago where I decided that I would determine my own epithets for Hecate. And I basically forbid myself sleep for about 4 days. And I went in and I looked for my own epithet. So, and the way, just sort of briefly, I learned all of the epithets, the classical epithets. I learned all of the epithets that people talk about now. And I went in and I did a ritual every hour of the moon for 5 days, which means that I slept for 4 hours at a time for a while. So probably I was clinically insane by the time that I actually did the working. But the thing that came out at the end was not so dissimilar to Azostos,
yes. Right?
The ungirt. And you know, so some of this is a little bit private for me, but I will say that the wild and untamed end of that, and it turns out that historically you can argue that maybe that's not what Azostos means, but at the time that's what it meant to me. That is the thing that got me through cancer, is the wild and untamed part of me and my link with wildness and the universe, and not in a healing way, but just in a really profoundly living and disobedient way. It probably could have kept me alive during these terrible moments.
Right, because it's literally like the I will not go quietly into the night, into like I will, like this it's a primordial life force, right? Like the I'm not, it's not necessarily kind or benevolent, but it is alive, right?
No, and when you're in that position, you know that you don't get kind, and you know that it's not going to be sweet, and you know that it's not going to be easy. And that's kind of what life is when, you know, when you're a grown-up, when you've got a kid, you're, you know, trying to operate in the real world. You don't get kind. You don't get easy. You know? And so she's there in understanding and resonance with that absolute toughness that it takes to keep going. I think, hey, I got a friend.
Nice.
This is Ripley. You're famous.
I worked with Hecate Brimo for a couple of years straight. Mm-hmm. That particular epithet means earth shaker, or you know, one that shakes you to the core. And I had done this because I was thinking about, I was a housewife and I was thinking about going back to school, and my husband didn't want me to go back to school because he liked me being the housewife. And so I was sitting outside with my then 3-year-old daughter, and I was praying, and I was doing a mantra that I had learned from one of Jade Soul Luna's books. He has a bunch of mantras in there that are in pre-Augustan Latin, which is really cool. And I was doing the mantra when there was a sudden earthquake because I was in the Bay Area and I was outside and the ground literally did a wave. And I went, okay, there's this sign. Thank you. I guess I needed that. And I decided to go back to school. I told my husband, fuck you. I'm going to do what I want. And I went to grad school instead. So after that, I dedicated the guest room as a temple. And when, after my baby had gone to bed and my husband was doing his thing, I would go up there and sleep on the floor of her temple and get onirific prophecies and visions and download what she wanted from me. So I was very connected with that aspect of her at that time, and received a lot of help and training as far as like what she wanted. I followed a series of dreams that led me to Sam Webster, who I really wish he could have been here today. I don't know what happened, but I followed a series of dreams that led me to him, and I've been training with him ever since to become a priest of Hecate. And so I just haven't been led astray, but it kind of started with Brimo.
What a great story. Wow.
Yeah.
Love the earthquake part.
Dude, that scared me. I'd never been outside during an earthquake. It was really scary.
Far out.
Yeah. And I said, fuck Harper. Are you proud?
That's my girl.
YouTube right there.
Okay, that's awesome.
That's it. YouTube must make this 18 and older. I mean, because otherwise what would be the point, right? That you just get kidding, YouTube. Otherwise.
Do we look worried?
No, you don't. I would be worried about kids listening. Not quite, because they should listen to it, because if kids got into magic, they might actually, I think it'd just be better. Now, what do you tell people who are just getting started, and what would you tell them for how to start with Hecate? Maybe they don't have a lot of money or something like that for a course or something. So how would you actually tell them, what would you tell them to go start with?
Make offerings. Get a cup of water. Get a candle. You can get that at the Dollar Tree or dollar store. Just get a simple white candle and a glass of water and just ask.
I'm so in agreement with that. Beautiful.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And one of the things for me, and again, I just go back and back to this idea of liminality and transitions, but every step we take is a transition. We cross a threshold every time we take a step, and that starts with the very first step. And so as this being that is at these thresholds with the keys and with the torches that light the way, she's there, and she will be there from the very first step. If you ask her to be, if you want her to be, if you see her. It doesn't have to be some elaborate, ritual full of all sorts of fancy stuff. It can be something really simple like Fawn is describing, but just call to her, introduce yourself, and tell her you want to learn from her, you want to travel with her. And that's a great way to get started, I think.
I think oftentimes people get so caught up in all of the steps and following everything with precision, and that it becomes almost reconstructionist, and we forget that this is an ecstatic relationship that we have, whether you're using compulsion or whether you're using worship or whether it's simply devotional. This is an ecstatic relationship that we're seeking, and it's personal. And so, one of the epithets that I personally love is lover of solitude, because I like to be alone, and my relationship with Hecate is mine alone. What I experience with her is not what Harper or Fawn experiences with her. And so, not to get caught up on all of the details and not to necessarily need to own every book or every tool. And mostly because a lot of times, and I'm going to say this and maybe ruffle some feathers, but people are so caught up with UPG, we forget that many times UPG is just unverified personal gnosis. It's just verified gnosis in the works. This cult of hers is evolving. And so what we're writing right now will be considered her literature in 2,000 years, right? Will be another turning point, another pivot, another step over the threshold in her story and in her cult unfolding and evolving.
In 2,000 years, it will be humans' interpretation of it. But what we're doing right now is for her. I love it that you brought that up, Sarah. And so here's a thing, right? And it was Dionysus and my understanding of Dionysus that brought me to to make this statement, but one of the things that's beautiful about what everyone has said is that it's not, this isn't a rational thing, right? You can buy all the books, you can read all the literature, you can go back and you can study everything that's known about Hecate since time immemorial, but you know what? That's not what it's about. It's about raw devotion, and it's about revealing yourself before deity. This is the magic that we seek to have, and it's a mistake to go and buy a book to do that. It's a mistake to go and do research when what you really need to do is, as Sarah said, be ecstatic. Find whatever way to hook into this flow and lose yourself. It's not about gaining a thing. It's about deep connection with invisible, huge forces that have existed for a long time, but have a new face now. We are the discoverers of her new faces. We see them as they evolve.
So I think we've had multiple shows where we discount the notion of personal gnosis, or we hate that term, unverified personal gnosis. And we gave out, I think, about many, many hours on this show where we criticized that notion as a way to belittle and not listen to people's experience, wherein all magic is experimental. All contact with the divine is experimental. If it was by the exact book, people wouldn't bother making personal relationships because they could just read the book and they would be done. But that's not how it is. I mean, even myself, I had my experiences with Hecate always go around like Thanatergos, or Bringer of Death, and many dreams are particularly like horrific because of that, but that's okay. That's how I roll, so I'm not shocked by that, actually. I appreciate the macabre visions, but even that, you know, unverified, because there's an epitaph, it's still my experience, right? Like, otherwise, what's the point? And that's what you're all saying. What's the point if you're not directly connecting? You know. Right.
If you want a religion where you have to go through an intermediary, you need to go and be a Christian. Right? We want a raw experience. We don't want the priest to tell us what to think and give us a cookie. No thanks.
Some Christians probably do have a direct experience of the Christo spirit, but... in a large part, yeah, especially in Protestant style religions.
All right, I'm just saying that statistically speaking, most people who identify as Christians would like to have their experience of the divine mediated. Thank you.
Well, it's easier, right? And that's exactly the opposite of what you're talking about with Hecate. You all kind of talk about this electric experience of directly either revealing or being revealed before the goddess, and there's no hiding there behind the mediator. If you're going to, all of your stories have similar fierceness in them, in that there's no hiding behind something that's liminal if you're going to actually experience it. It's just not, how is it possible? Every one of your stories involves some sort of nakedness there, or being able to dive in. Not necessarily with somebody telling you this is what you should believe, which also I'm sure she has another epithet that deals with being a rebel or the supporter of rebels.
You think?
Harper's working on it. We have the technology.
We do. We all have the technology.
I tell students not to read books. I said, if you're going to read anything, read Theogony, read Hesiod, read, you know, the primary texts that we have, because, and then go to her with that, because when you're reading, I think people are seeking outside validation, which is why they tend to like want to have the guru or the priest or whoever, but this type of devotion doesn't come cheap, and it requires real blood, sweat, and tears, and You'll only get as far as deep as you're going to be able to go if you are able to let these other things go, because you can't drag that stuff in there with you. And I think she's one that doesn't accept that either. You know, you only get what you give. She don't have time for that. You know.
And speaking about time, any last words that you have for people watching, listening about Hecate, for people watching, any last words from everyone?
Catabasis is available on Amazon for purchase.
And if you're in the Toronto...
If
you're in the Toronto area, have it as part of our library that you can check it out for free at no cost and take a look at the first volume here in Toronto.
I love Ontario. That.
Just come and check it out. There's some beautiful art in it and some beautiful poems and meditations. So if you want to see it, if you're not convinced by Amazon and you live in the greater Toronto area, here we are, 607 Toronto Street. Come in the room. So there you go.
It is, yeah. The idea is to keep it only on paper. So there are no PDFs out there. There are no eBooks out there. We went really old school with this. We wanted something that in, you know, 1,000 years they would find. So I made sure to get published on archival safe paper. And we're also in the Library of Congress. So the next volume we're starting off with will be at Winter Solstice. And it's the epithet will be Hecate Lucifera, just Hecate the Lightbringer. So that's just a little hint.
I think I owe you a poem, Fawn.
Oh yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, thanks to everyone for having us on. This has been a real pleasure, and I can't say enough wonderful things about working with these women on Catabasis. It's been great, and thanks, Andrea.
Well, thanks everyone for coming on the show. We're going to kind of go over what we have coming up for the store real fast. Let me hide everyone, but we'll come back in a second. So, Zach, what do we have going on? Of course.
Well, we have our Dumb Supper coming up next week.
Correct, sir. Next weekend. If you are a sponsor of the store, we are going to show you how to do a dumb supper, take you into a meditative state, and have a dumb supper with the dead. Dumb does not mean stupid. It means you cannot speak. Just say it for people.
We have to clarify that.
But in big terms, we have a documentary that was produced by York University on about the store and connecting with the dead. Not totally different paradigm than the Hecate work, because we did a voodoo ritual that got documentaried, and we're going to show the full documentary with all of the cast and all of the people who made it happen at our store on the 26th. We're going to have a whole day of events around the documentary that got produced that we're really proud of. We're really proud of the students that made it. A birdie told me it's being submitted as a pilot to Netflix, so here we are. We hope. There you go.
We hope.
It's a full day event. If you're in the greater Toronto area, come out. We're going to have some free food, and we're going to have teas like we did before COVID. There's going to be a lot of people. We have Brian, who's going to be playing guitar after thing. And as a last capstone for the night, we're going to do a huge fox luck ritual. So if you're interested in Taoist magic at all, come out.
Doesn't get more dials than foxes.
Speaking of other liminal beings, as we're talking about like Kate's liminality, foxes are pretty much the height of Taoist liminality in a lot of ways. And then, of course, what else we have after that coming up?
Well, after that, I mean, we're going through the tarot series, so you just went through Pentacles, and we'll go through the rest of them after, too.
All right, so that's for our sponsors. If you're sponsors, we have workshops every two weeks on. They keep this show running, this free show running, and we really appreciate all the sponsors, and we can't thank you enough. And that said, the last thing we're going to mention is, as me and Zach have been talking, soon, before the first of the year, the Sangha, which is an esoteric Buddhism and Taoist Sangha, will start up their rituals again to have public rituals in our store of either about Buddhist or Taoist nature. And we, particularly the Sangha, uses esoteric Sino-Buddhism as our method. So it's really hardcore rituals, more hardcore than they would see them on the surface. But if you're interested, those are always going to be free or donation only. And we're going to start them up soon, before the first of the year. So if you're around, the last thing I'll say is 11/26. The first public shrine for our store is going to be made available on the day that we do the documentary. So we are setting up an altar to the dead that people can come to in outside our store. They can just come to for free and kind of commune with the dead. And they can commune with a particularly blessed mirror that we have, basically, so you can communicate with your dead. And it has been blessed by one aspect of Agate as well as some other entities of the dead to be sort of a multicultural, whatever.
It's the Death UN panel.
the Dead UN altar. So whatever you believe in, it's probably got that vibe, so that way you can communicate with your own ancestors. Publicly available, free. It'll be right there. All you have to do is come. We'll give you instructions on how to use the mirror. It's really simple. You just open it up and meditate. There's going to be a bench in the hall. So we're doing that as sort of part of our belief to empower the community. If you don't have the space or the availability to do something like that, we've got it here. You just, even if the store's closed, if the building's open, you can just come in. If the building's closed, then we're still here. You don't have to buy anything. You just come by and say, hey, I want to work with the shrine a little bit just for my own personal reasons. Great. Fantastic. We'll open the door. No pressure. We'll let you do what you need to do. And we hope you buy something, but it's not necessary. That first shrine that's going to be available is there for you as a part of our community outreach, as part of our community service for Queen City Curio. With that, as we say every week, stay safe, stay well, and we'll see you next week. Deeper Down the Rabbit Hole is sponsored by the Queen City Curio and Apothecary in Toronto, Ontario, proudly in East Chinatown. Our store is at 607 Girard Street East, Unit 401. Just take the elevator up to the fourth floor and we're right there. We carry the finest spiritual goods for all spiritual paths. Whatever you are into, we can help you. Check out our full public library of occult materials with over 1,000 books. Accessible anytime the store is open. Check us out online at queencitycurio.ca. Be sure to leave a wish at our wish shrine right outside our door. You never know, it may just come to pass.